This is learning about teaching physics. In this podcast, we share nuggets from the education research
that you can use in class tomorrow.
Michael has been teaching high school physics for 20 years.
And Stephanie is a physicist working on education research.
Each episode, we explore some idea about teaching and learning physics
for high school and college
by discussing with the education researchers and each other to figure out what these results really mean for us as instructors.
This episode, we're talking about classroom demonstrations, and I guess I'd say demos are one of the essential pieces of a physics teacher's toolbox, and one of my favorite things about teaching it.
Now here we come finally to some of the research that I have been doing.
This is from a talk by Eric Mazur of Harvard University.
I like to do demonstrations. You know, when I do physics, I like to show how nature works. And to me, there's nothing more convincing than seeing it. So I would have always thought, if there's something that students have a misconception with, just show it to them, right? And then it'll work. So I'd heard about demonstrations. I'd heard about teaching not being very effective. That's how I became interested in education. But I also heard about demonstrations not being very effective. So I decided to do some research.
In particular, he heard about some studies by Pamela Krause at the University of Washington. Students liked the demos she found, but often didn't learn the ideas that the instructor wanted them to learn.
Like what, for example?
Like in that popular shoot the monkey demonstration.
Science, right? Where do we want to aim when we shoot the gun so if the gun startles the monkey and he lets go?
This is Science Theater on YouTube.
Whatever, right when we shoot the gun, where do you have to aim so that the bullet hits the monkey when it's falling?
And for those of you who are worrying about this, it's a stuffed toy monkey.
Right.
Experiment. He's got a cool little headband. That's so a blindfold, so you know it doesn't have to watch the danger.
So I'm going to aim right at the monkey. We're going to see what happens. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. There we go. We hit it.
And about half the students would misremember that the gun had to be aimed so that the monkey was at the same height as the bullet when the bullet was at the top of the arc of its trajectory.
But that's not true. It doesn't matter how high the bullet goes. As long as the gun is pointed at the monkey, it will hit the monkey as it falls.
Right. This prompted Eric Mazur to look closer at his own classroom demos. For example, he uses one particular demo to talk about torque. You have two scales, one on the left and one on the right, and a plank across the top of both. If you put an object right in the middle, each scale reads the same thing, half the weight of the object.
If I take that object and move it to one side, the scale on the side where the object is indicates twice the original reading, and the other one goes to zero. If you zero it out, the scale is just a plank on that. It's a very common misconception, even among Harvard students, believe it or not, to think that the plank evens out the load, and therefore the two scales will read the same thing no matter where you put the object.
Right. So the students take into account the sum of the forces, not the sum of the torques.
Yeah. If you're having trouble imagining this, go to our website for a picture. So Mazur tested to see if they remembered the demo, and then prompted further to see if they could really explain the physics.
What became very clear is that we didn't need those more advanced testing. Just testing their memory already revealed some quite interesting things. In fact, here I'm showing you what one student wrote. As demonstrated in lecture, both scales will read 10 newton regardless of where the center of mass is located. The platform and the metal block form one unit that is being measured, so the scales show two evenly distributed readings no matter where the metal block is placed along the platform. I mean, I read this. Yes. Yeah, we record attendance, so we know that. But there are plenty of examples of this. And initially, you know, I was just so shell-shocked. But it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. Well, the answer doesn't make sense. But, but that this happens makes a lot of sense. Because how does the memory, how does the brain work? How do we store information? We store information not by facts, but by mental models.
In other words, seeing isn't really believing. We make our beliefs first, and if we don't change those beliefs, or models, of how the world works, then the facts get adjusted to the model rather than the other way around. If a student comes to class and sees this demo and is confused because that doesn't match how they think about things,
and the instructor just moves on, then the student never gets a chance to revise their mental model to match what they saw.
Trial lawyers have known this for a long time. Just plant the wrong model in people's head and they'll adjust their memory to match that model. Cognitive psychologists have known this also for a long time. Observation can see, this is the real scary thing. Observation can actually reinforce a misconception. This student that I just showed there actually used his or her incorrect model to to reconstruct the memory, to change the memory, and use that as evidence, as shown in lecture, blah, blah, blah. It was the opposite I wanted to show in lecture. What you have to do is you have to provide an opportunity to revise the models.
At least that was Mazur's hypothesis. Does the way that a demonstration is implemented change how much students learn from it? He teamed up with Catherine Crouch to investigate.
Okay. I'm Catherine Crouch, and I teach at Swarthmore College in the Physics and Astronomy Department.
Crouch was then a postdoctoral researcher with Mazur. They presented the demos and recitation sections.
This was in the large lecture introductory mechanics class at Harvard University, so an enrollment of about 200 students.
And students saw the demos in one of four ways. The first group didn't see any demo at all, nothing.
The second one is do the demonstration, but do it in the standard way as a demonstration in front of the students. We told the instructor, do the best possible job explaining what it is that you're doing, but nothing more.
And we told them to do that as well as they could, but to never invite the students to think about what was going to happen. And then there was the predict mode where we told students what was going to be, what the experiment was that was going to be carried out.
So they had to think about it for a minute or so, and then use clickers to predict what the outcome of the demonstration would be.
And looks like just about everybody has stated their opinion.
And then we did the demonstration.
And then there was the predict and discuss mode, where in addition to making the prediction, there was opportunity for discussion.
And they had to explicitly check a box that said whether their prediction did or did not agree with their observation. And then they had to turn to their neighbors and try to resolve any inconsistencies between observation and prediction.
Did each student only see the demos in one of those modes?
No, they rotated each week. They did this for a couple of classes. At the end of the semester, students got an open-ended test which asked them about a physical situation just like the demo.
And they tested to see whether the students remembered the demo?
That's right. Whether they got the right outcome and could explain the physics.
And the results were quite interesting because just doing the demonstration has only a marginal improvement over not doing any demonstration at all. None, in terms of learning.
Wait, was it marginal or was it none?
Kind of both. On the test, they were marginally better at giving the right outcome of the hypothetical experiment. But they were no better at explaining the physics than if they hadn't seen the demo at all. To me, that's the real learning, being able to explain the physics. And seeing the demo didn't help with that at all.
Wow, that's kind of sobering.
I should also add the caveat that this isn't universal. Some research shows some improvement in student learning for some demos, but that seems to be the exception that proves the rule. But let's hear about the rest of the study.
Did the group that predicted the results do better than those who just saw it?
You betcha. If we use the group that didn't see any demos at all as a baseline, the students in the group that had to predict the outcome were twice as good at identifying the outcome on the test. They were also about four times better at explaining the physics than were the students who just saw the demo.
Thinking back about the stuff about mental models, if a student comes into class thinking that the two scales will balance, they have a conflict in their heads between what they think they'll see and what they do see in the demo.
That conflict is called cognitive dissonance. And when you just do a demonstration, students don't have time to reflect and think.
If then you don't resolve that cognitive dissonance, then what happens is that you adjust your memory to the faulty model rather than the other way around, right?
What about when students discuss their answers?
That did help, but only a little.
And we fully expected adding the discussion to make a big difference. And we were surprised that it made just this little incremental difference.
But that's quite a time sink to have a discussion like that.
Yeah, it added 8 minutes to their class time.
So at an absolute minimum, I would recommend to any instructor who does a demo to precede the demo by having students predict the outcome. Give them time to think and then have them commit to a prediction and then do the demonstration.
But wait a minute, I'm still stuck on why the discussion didn't really help much more. I mean, wouldn't discussing it help to solidify the learning?
There's something else surprising about this study, which I think gets at that question. They were actually pretty disappointed after all this at just how few students could really explain the physics behind the demos, no matter what group they were in.
And these were challenging to understand. They were not, we chose demonstrations that were not trivial. But it was a little bit disheartening how with all of them it didn't make that much of a difference. And the rates of just coming up with the right answer were fairly high.
Around 80%.
But the rate of being able to clearly articulate a good explanation for why it happened the way it did was a little dismal.
Only about 30%.
I don't think I'd really call that a success.
Well, it's still better than those who'd only watched the demo passively, but it does seem to suggest that there's got to be something more that we can do. One of the other authors on that study did his whole thesis on this kind of thing. He found that students learned more from discussion when they used demos based on specific research on student thinking. Specifically, those demos that were developed as part of the Interactive Lecture Demonstration, or ILD, project.
Ah, so rather than just using a demo that seems to make sense as an instructor, like Mazur's scales.
I also think that predicting or discussing a demo, it's kind of just scratching the surface. So that might be why some of the learning gains were so lackluster. Some instructors have students design their own experiments to test an idea.
They'll say, all right, well, how can we test if this mechanism we have in mind is correct? What kinds of experiments could we do?
That helps to build on students' intuition, rather than just showing them that they're wrong. There have been some pretty positive results with that approach. Another idea is to use hands-on apparatus in combination with worksheets to guide student thinking and discussion. They've done this at the University of Washington and had a lot of success. But those worksheets are developed through years of research.
And there are research-based resources out there, like the University of Colorado's FET simulations, where students could practice making predictions for physical situations on their own. And whether or not I try any of those more involved techniques, it's pretty clear that it's low cost and high gain to have students predict the outcome of my demo before I do it. But I still have some questions. For one, what if students are just making a wild guess when they predict the outcome of a demo? That hardly seems useful.
Well, Eric Mazur says that in that case, the demo is premature.
They basically have no basis to understand the observation. And you've not provided them the tools to correctly interpret the demonstration.
Okay, so I want to choose when to do my demonstration so that students can actually predict the outcome. But even then, don't these demos kind of stack the deck against the students? I mean, they're kind of supposed to get the answer wrong, because the answer is often opposite of what you'd expect. I don't want to discourage my students.
I worry about that, too. We've done a lot of studies showing that students leave our introductory physics classes thinking that they can't really figure out physics for themselves, that it's kind of beyond them. And also at the University of Colorado, just anecdotally, we've heard students kind of complain about the tutorials, and those tutorials are based on that model of getting them to confront and resolve their, you know, misconceptions. They say things like, I think it's B, so the answer must be C. So I think that's a really valid concern. We don't want to turn off our students. And I asked Mazur about that.
But I agree with you. If you have students who get it wrong 100% of the time, they could walk away thinking, well, physics is magic, which is not what we want to happen. I think it can be resolved by adjusting the level of complexity to the ability of the students.
Though, of course, some demos we do are just meant to grab a student's attention rather than to actually teach or demonstrate a concept that we've been already covering in class.
And what's great is that you can do that with just really simple demos, like dropping a bowling ball and a billiard ball from the roof together. Most people predict that the bowling ball will outrace the billiard ball, but in a race of about 30 feet, which is the height of my roof, they hit the ground together. That's why it took thousands of years more to develop physics, I think, than it did art or architecture. Our intuition, on even a very basic level as to how the universe works, just isn't right much of the time. That's what makes simple demos so cool and powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And in that case, I think it's okay if they're surprised. The reason they're surprised is they did have some intuition about what would happen, and it was wrong, and that's really valuable.
How do you and I learn things? It's not because somebody just tells us how something works or how something happens and then we store that as a fact in our brain. No, you know, we see something and we say, huh, I wonder about this. That's how we form understanding, not by saying, okay, I'll store this information in my head. No, we wonder. We think, huh, that's strange. I thought this or that, and it's different from what I thought. Let me figure it out.
But if the demonstration is obvious and everyone knows what will happen,
everybody shrugs their shoulder and says, okay, that's fine. I knew it already. Nice you showed it to me, but let's move on.
Whereas if the outcome is surprising and we give students a chance to reflect on their mental models,
you go, wow, that's odd. Let me think about it. Let me try to figure this out. And then there's the aha moment. So I think that's when real learning actually happens.
Learning About Teaching Physics is a short series produced by Stephanie Chastine and co-hosted by Michael Fuchs.
The study discussed today can be found in the June 2004 issue of the American Journal of Physics. You can find today's show notes in a variety of places.
One of which is on my website at sciencegeekgirl.com. That's all one word. Just look for the podcast's page. Or check out the Physics Education Research User's Guide, which contains this podcast and a host of other valuable information on applying education research to your teaching. That's at perusersguide.org/podcasts. Show music is licensed under the Creative Commons. You've heard DC 3000 by the Thievery Corporation, Wadadori by Cornelius, Action at a Distance by Matt Moss, and the current piece is courtesy of Mark Crawford. Thanks to Science Theater and the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics for providing use of their audio.
And thanks to our guests on the podcast today, Eric Mazur of Harvard University and Catherine Crouch of Swarthmore.
This podcast owes its existence to assistance from a grant from the Physics Education Research Topical Group of the American Association of Physics Teachers. Thanks to them.